This episode was sponsored by Critical Dice and the Endless Bag of Dice.
Welcome to the Compendium, a resource designed to help you spend less time learning D&D and more time actually playing.
So let's dive into half-elf traits. Let's talk about what makes these guys so cool to play.
Let's do it. Everything. So,
Could you elaborate on that, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Okay, so for half-elves, they get a ton of stuff, like almost as much as elves do, and elves have a huge list before they even get into sub-races. And so it's not surprising that the half-elves would be the similar. So this is my favorite part about the half-elves is the ability score increase. They get a +2 to the charisma, and then they get a +1 to 2 other ability scores of your choice.
Does any other race get that many bumps to ability scores?
Yes. I want to say there's a sub-race of dwarves that does.
Wow, that's really niche. I mean, you have to...
It is.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Normally it's two. Two, maybe three.
Yeah, because dwarves get, +2 to constitution, and then I think it's the mountain dwarves that end up getting... so they get +2 to constitution, and then they get a +2 to strength, I want to say. As well, so that's the closest one that has ended up getting 4. So this is a kind of a big deal, and normally you would see this kind of thing happen where they get a big bump like this, and then not a lot of extra stuff on top. Like that was the big thing they mm-hmm. get. Like for humans, they can get 1 to 2 different attributes if they take the extra feat at the beginning. Or they can just get 1 to everything, which is, I mean, that's +6 all said, but it's not as impactful. But here, their abilities and special things just keep going. But real quick, so the age for half-elves is they reach adulthood around 20, like humans, but then live to about 180. So pretty comparable to, say, like a halfling would. And then the alignment... typically have that chaotic bend, like the elven heritage. Again, also humans do as well because of the love of freedom, creative expression, always looking for their place in the world. Mm-hmm. So that would, and it makes a lot of sense too, because think about them trying to fit in with elven society that has like, you know, everyone knows their role and there's longstanding traditions that are centuries or millennia old, and they just don't fit into it. And so they kind of would resent those rules and those traditions wanting to, you know, kind of buck that system. For the size, half elves are about the same size as humans, between 5 and 6 feet tall. And their size, of course, is medium and a base speed of walking 30 feet. And then they have a couple cool more things here. They have dark vision. So they get to keep the dark vision from the elves up to 60 feet as if in bright light, and then total darkness as if it were dim light. And as always, no color, just shades of gray. And then they get fey ancestry. This is the big one. They have advantage on saving throws against being charmed, and magic can't put them to sleep, which begs the question, do they sleep? I think they do. They just can't be forced to be put to sleep.
Yeah, because elves usually meditate, right? For their 4-hour right. long rest. Or right. their long rest is a 4-hour meditation where they're like semi-conscious.
Mm-hmm. Right. So they have advantage against being charmed, and they can't go to sleep unless they want to. But they do actually sleep. So it's a somewhat muted version of that feature with the elves, but it's still pretty powerful mechanically speaking.
And remind me again with charmed, is that just the actual like what's it called,
a charmed person?
Yes.
No, there are several
charmed condition, like there's the condition charm, that's yes. what I'm thinking of. Is that like, is it, what is it specific, is it, it
seems, it's referring to the condition,
but okay,
it's referring to the condition, because a lot of those mind altering or social spells are going to name check the charm condition in addition to whatever else the spell or feature does. And so here they have advantage against all of those spells that mention the charm condition or are a charming effect, and it'll usually call it out pretty obviously. And then they gain skill versatility. So again, going with this idea of best of both worlds, they gain proficiency in 2 skills of your choice, just whatever you want, which is pretty awesome. that adaptability. And then languages going along with the emissary or, you know, being a diplomat, they can speak, read, and write common, elvish, and one extra language of your choice. So they just get a lot of really great things that aren't powerful by themselves, but they're powerful in their adaptability, which is, again, my favorite thing in D&D is adaptability. I rarely go hardcore into a single concept or idea. I like to keep my options open. I like the kind of Swiss Army knife vibe that a lot of characters can have, like, you know, Doctor Strange or Iron Man does. And so this only adds to that. And then when you put that along with, you know, bards, they get even more skills and then expertise and all this other stuff. It's pretty great.
And that is it for the player's handbook, half elf. If you are playing just you don't get like a sub race option as a half elf in the player's handbook. However, we are going to refer back to our new best friend book, which is the Sword Coast Adventures.
Adventurer's Guide. Yeah.
Which I finally had to buy because we were referencing it so much that I'm like, all right, that's it. I got to have this book. Where there are some variations of half-elves that you can play if you're wanting something a little bit more niche or unique.
Yes. And so what's interesting with the sub-races, what's happening here lore-wise is they're assuming that the kind of elf that one of your progenitors wasn't just elf, because there's lots of different kinds of elves. Mm-hmm. And so what they do here is very much like what we did with the tieflings, where you don't just add stuff, you swap out some default things for some specialized things. And so for all of these that are in the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide, what you do is you take the skill versatility, the part that lets you gain proficiency with two skills of your choice, and take that out and instead add this new feature. And there are four main ones. Oftentimes, D&D Beyond will reference like the Mark of Detection half-elf, Mark of Storm half-elf. Those aren't sub-races in the sense, but mechanically they work like that because of the dragon mark from Eberron, so we don't include those. So if you're looking through D&D Beyond and you're like, well, wait, there's two more here, that's why. It's not really a sub-race, it's just an extra feature that has a similar mechanic, so the computer program and algorithm kind of uses it that same way. So the first one is the aquatic elf. Very straightforward. You let go of skill versatility, and instead you get to have a swimming speed of 30 feet.
So walking speed is 30, and you also have a swim speed of 30.
Right, and normally your swim speed gets cut in half if you don't have a swim speed. So this is kind of great. And now notice it doesn't say that you can breathe underwater or anything, or talk to the fishes, but you can't swim with the fishes. And maybe that's because you have kind of like little webbed stuff between your fingers and toes, something like that. But that's really all that one does.
So if you were a half elf with a gnome instead of a human and you had speak with small animals, do you think you could speak with the fishes?
Yes, but only small ones.
A little guppy. Swim away. Yeah,
little guppies.
Swim away.
Yeah, you talk to like the seahorses and that kind of stuff. Yeah, that'd be pretty awesome. I'm getting Dr. Doolittle vibes now again. All right. Then, very interestingly, there's the drow half-elf, which is actually maybe the most powerful option here, because you let go of that skill versatility and you get the drow's magic. So you know dancing lights as a cantrip. You get fairy fire at third level, and then darkness at fifth level. So just like how the drow have innate spell casting that levels up with the character from the race, not the class, you get that here. And so you give up some skills to gain innate magic that you can use. And again, as always, charisma is the spell casting ability for those. And then we've got the high half elf. And I'm going to avoid making the obvious joke there, but basically they get rid of the skill versatility. Instead, they choose the high elf's weapon training or cantrip. The high elves, they get weapon training, so that they're innately good with longsword, short sword, longbow, short bow. And they also can pick a cantrip from the wizard spell list. Here, you can do either or, but not both. right? So that's kind of interesting. But there you go, like you get all cantrip, whereas with the drow magic you get like a cantrip and then two other spells, which is kind of awesome. And then the last one is wood half elf variant, where they like go with skill versatility, and said they can either choose the elf weapon training, fleet of foot, or Mask of the Wild. So there's three options, but you can't choose all of them. So Mask of the Wild lets you helps you to hide kind of in plain sight in natural surroundings. Fleet of foot lets you move a little bit faster. And then there's the elf weapon training from before.
And then just to clarify too, in the Sword Coast Adventures, there's the Moon Elf and the Sun Elf.
Right. So that's other names for Wood Elf and High Elf.
Okay.
Is it?
Well, it's got the Wood Elf in here, and then it's got the Moon Elf or Sun Elf Descendant, which is the High Elf's Elf Weapon Training, right, or Cantrip. So basically, it doesn't make a difference. It's just for flavor if you're a Moon Elf or a Sun Elf.
Right. And back in the day, those were kind of the two big distinctions of subraces of elves, was the Sun and Moon Elf, or the Gold and Silver Elves, or if you're being nasty, the Gold and Dross Elves. Which is just really mean. And that was kind of an early D&D delineation between like the high elves of magic and kingdoms versus like the Mirkwood style elves that are nature and forests and things. But we've kind of let that go a lot in the newer editions. So that I see why the distinction's there.
So understanding everything you can do with a half elf, you already mentioned Bard, but what are some of your favorite ways to play a half elf, or what do you think that they really lend themselves to naturally with all of these different benefits that they get?
Right. So, I mean, there's a lot that naturally lend, especially when you consider that for most of the spellcasters in D&D, both divine and arcane, the most common attribute for the spellcasting is going to be charisma, because warlock and sorcerer and Bard on the arcane side all use charisma. And then paladins, and I think it's just paladins on the divine side, if I remember correctly. So out of like the eight spellcasting classes, like half of them use charisma. So all of those would be great options. And if you look too with sorcerer, there's the wild magic origin, where they have a kind of innate attunement with the Feywild, which is chaotic and random, which make a lot of sense. And then you've even got the Fey patron for the warlocks, which is pretty great to kind of go along with that. But I could also see how that malcontentness, that kind of just never having a place in this world, would lend a half elf character to strike an allegiance with some greater entity to become a warlock with their patron. Same way with a paladin, where they have found a god. Maybe the elven gods have accepted them, and they're like, if they can accept me, why can't you? But there's an element of anger there, and so smitey smite, they choose to become a paladin. For like, you know, to go the other side of the wine and cheese pairing that we always do too, the things that would be kind of like a little outside the normal realm. It's difficult because of that versatility with the skills
with
and versatility
two things that you want in anything, like two ability increases of anything you want. Like,
exactly. You could really make it work anywhere, but I don't think lore-wise barbarian and perhaps artificer make as much sense. And that would be really interesting because I could do it well. I mean, if they really did grow up in the wilds, maybe they were adopted into a tribe of like Goliaths or half-orcs too. Like they were like, oh, this makes sense to me. They become a barbarian. Or maybe they live in such a large kingdom that they, you know, sought tutelage underneath a gnome and learned the arts of being an artificer. So I haven't seen those as much, but honestly, they can really kind of slot into anywhere. But there's definitely ones that kind of go with the grain more often than there are things that go against the grain when making those pairings.
So hopefully we've already dispelled these for most people, but what are some of the common misunderstandings about this race that tend to potentially lean people away from playing one, would you say?
The only thing I can think of, because for again, I'm biased because you start reading the half elf and the stats and you're like, wow, this is great. But I think maybe the way that we started this conversation was that they're only half as good, right? That there may be a prejudice or a misconception that, oh, I don't play half elves because if I wanted to be a half elf, I'd just be an elf, right? If I wanted to be a human, I would just be a human. They don't get that feat, then I really want that feat. And so not seeing the really wonderful synergy that happens with that lineage and the great things that it can do, I think that would be the only reason why someone might shy away, just not understanding the kind of strength of that.
I think there's also a higher element of creativity needed for this race. Perhaps. It's not quite as plug and play or straightforward as some of the other ones where it's like, this is your community, these are your people, these are your rules. You have to make a lot of that up for your backstory and kind of where mm-hmm. you came from or what you thought. And so it could, I guess, be a little intimidating for people that maybe aren't used to that process of character development or story development for their characters.
Yeah, absolutely. I think going back to what we said at the very beginning of all of this when we started with humans was that if you don't know what to do, just pick a human, right? And we kind of recommended to people, don't start off your very first character as an elf unless you really, really want to, because there's so much going on. I think that the half elves fall in that category as well. It's such a wonderful sandbox playground that if you're unsure or you're intimidated by it, just you'll get them next time. Get some, you know, log some hours with a different race and really dream up what you want to do before you jump into that kind of really, really deep pool. But it doesn't mean you can't. It's just, you know what you're getting yourself into.
And everyone knows it's always good to have a backup character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just write Junior on the end of that character sheet and keep going. Is that how we're ending? No! That was a stupid joke. Keep this in for the full episode. I protest. Thank you for listening to the compendium. I'm glad you're still here. You did me wrong.
We'll see you guys next time.
Let me hang there. Oh my gosh.
We hope you guys enjoyed listening to our conversation this week. If you haven't done so already, it would really help us out if you would take a moment to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review. The Compendium is also on Patreon. So if you like listening, that is a great way to help contribute to the content that we create. New episodes are available every Tuesday and Friday, or Monday and Thursday if you're a patron. And you can always keep up with us between episodes by following us on social media. Just look up The Compendium, that's C-O-M-P-E-N-D-M, on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Jason also shares a bunch of great content and plot hooks on his page, The Critical Dice, so make sure that you check him out and follow him as well. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will see you guys next time.